Welcome to the BJ and Bucher podcast on The Cycle. BJ, it feels like we just did one of these. Maybe it's because we did. We got you as soon as you came back from Rio and covered the events there. But we have other things to get to. The news never stops when it comes to the NBA. Let us get right into it. You saw something that I did that caught your attention, which was, you know, I made my way too early predictions for the awards. And before we get to your awards, and I promise you, listeners, you are going to get BJ's choices for MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved, Sixth Man, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year. I wanted to ask you, because I've always been curious about this, and you've seen it from every perspective, basically, which is the awards themselves, the individual awards. And as a player, if you were conscious of teammates or teams that you played on who were angling for a particular award for a particular player, and how you handle that as an agent now in making awards and award clauses part of a contract. I would think that that goes against your general philosophy when it comes to what makes a player great and points him in the right direction and puts a team in the right direction.
I really do. And there are a lot of agents who love to put individual clauses into players' contracts, but I stay away from it as much as possible to keep the focus on winning. Winning is the only intangible that I've discovered in this business that creates harmony with everyone, with the players, with management, with owners, with coaches. So I like to focus on winning. I like to put the responsibility and hold everyone accountable, and that accountability and responsibility is on the players to perform. All the other things, all of those individual awards, rebounds, assists, three-point shots, whatever those things, doesn't mean anything for me and my philosophy and what I like to really concentrate on, which is win, win, win.
So do you make a conscious effort not to include those things, not to include those clauses in the contracts that your players sign?
If possible. Sometimes, you know, you have to use creative ways to get to where you need to get to with teams. And, you know, clearly it's just not me that's negotiating. So I have to be able to hear the other side, address their needs as well, address the, you know, what the player, the client feels that, you know, what his worth is. And then we try to figure that out. But if possible, I love to focus in on winning. But sometimes it's not possible, and then I have to get creative, and we have to figure out other ways to get to the number or get to the range that we need to get to. And sometimes you do have to use those incentives and bonuses to actually get there, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
So have you played? I'm sure you have. You've played with guys who you got the sense, whether it was an award, whether it was all-star recognition, whether it was an assist title or a scoring title or a rebounding title. Surely you've played with guys where it became apparent to you.
It's a distraction, Rick. It's.
But you played with guys that you knew that's what their ambition was.
Absolutely. I played with guys, and it doesn't work. The only thing that works within a group is when you win. That's the cohesive glue that brings everyone together. All the other things, okay, this guy wins Sixth Man of the Year. Okay. If it doesn't help us win games, you're like, okay, big deal. Right. You know, this guy had a clause. If he got 1,500 rebounds in a season, he gets, all right, you're not celebrating. You're like, okay, why won't this guy go out here and defend screen roll? Well, he's not trying to defend screen roll so he can get the defensive rebound to get that bonus. And you're like, you know what I mean? Or, you know, you're calling a play and the guy won't leave the weak side because he just knows, you know, there's a larger percentage or chance for the rebound to come up on the other side. So, you know guys who are playing to win. You know guys are playing out there just for stats and get numbers. So I don't think it's necessary. I think when you win and you contribute to a winning franchise, when you contribute to the success of a group, I think people, especially people in the business, they respect that. And more importantly, they understand that, you know, there are a lot of players who do the right things that don't show up in the stat sheet. You know, when you watch guys like an Andre Iguodala, those guys, okay, they're not putting up major numbers or Sean Livingston, but they make winning plays and they contribute to the success of a group. That's the respect that you get, not only from your teammates, but throughout this league.
Fair enough. Okay, so in fact, and despite the fact that you don't believe in awards and you think they're counterproductive, We're now going to run through the awards and get your selections for who you think is going to win them this season. So,
wow.
Yeah. So let's go backward. Let's save MVP for the last, because okay. I wonder whether you're going to gonna spring a surprise on us here.
Okay.
Let's start with Rookie of the Year. Who do you have as your Rookie of the Year?
I look for the rookie who I think is ready to play right now and who's going to get the most minutes and just contribute.
Yeah, okay.
And I think the kid, the Dunn kid in Minnesota.
Really?
I think that kid was he was terrific this summer, first
yes.
of all.
Yes.
I think physically he's ready to play. And okay. I think he's going to get a significant amount of minutes this year, whether he's playing the one or the two. I just think the kid is going to play. And I don't see a scenario where that kid is not going to play significant minutes this year.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's ready to play. He looked like he's ready to play right now.
I saw the same thing, but I thought with Ricky Rubio at the one and with some of the other talent there, I don't know if he's going to get as many minutes as, say, a Brandon Ingram with the Lakers or Ben Simmons with the Philadelphia 76ers. And unfortunately, having been involved in this and having voted on this award, on all the awards for the last 20-plus years, I know that a lot of times it comes down to statistics. It comes down to there's a lot of voters out there and they just look at the numbers. You go back and check on Rookie of the Year, whoever the leading scorer was, whoever had the best statistical line, that's the guy that ultimately wins the award. Not to say that your selection isn't deserving, but if we're looking at who's going to end up picking the one that's going to get the award, it's a little skewed. It doesn't necessarily make it fair. So I have Brandon Ingram with the Lakers. Let's go most improved. Who do you have winning most improved?
That award, I always look for the player who's going to, I think, get to where ultimately he should get to as a player. I think this kid is an MVP caliber player. Mm-hmm. That kid, Porzingis, for the Knicks,
wow,
I think is going to be the most improved.
Okay.
I'm looking for him to make a major jump from last year to this year.
Yeah.
Not so much individually with stats, but his contribution to winning. Because that kid there, I think he is a top five talent right now. I think that kid is sensational. Like, it's kind of like, when you're in high school, your freshman year, you're kind of filling it out.
Yeah.
You're not in eighth grade anymore. Suddenly now you're in high school. You don't want to be a freshman. I think this kid right now is going to have a terrific sophomore year.
Yeah.
I think he's going to make a jump. I'm really looking for him to contribute in the bottom line. And I'm really interested in their team because, to me, that kid there can really, really have an effect on winning. And I'm just looking for him to contribute and make a big impact this year.
I picked DeAndre Jordan, expecting that he's going to have a bounce from his time with Team USA.
That's a good pick, Rick. He was second on my list. Out of all the players who I thought benefited the most from being in USA was him. I saw his confidence grow by leaps and bounds. I thought he was great this summer, and I wouldn't be surprised if he is the most improved player. But, I mean, he was first team all, NBA
no,
this
no,
year?
No. Yeah.
I don't know how much better you can get than that.
That's fair. And that's why if I was going by your methodology, which is probably the smarter way to go, I might go with a Miles Turner as well. Because I think they're a much improved team.
Yes.
I think the group around them is improved. And that's the same thing Kristaps gets, is that he's got the best point guard he's ever played with. He's got Frank Hornacek, who I think is going to know how to handle the talent and utilize Kristaps to the fullest extent. And so he has a lot of things working for in his favor that allow him to make that bounce.
I agree.
Defensive player of the year.
Well, I mean, how could you really vote against Kawhi Leonard? It seems like Kawhi Leonard and Draymond Green are just there, one and two. You know, Kawhi Leonard, I think, is terrific. I think he's a phenomenal defensive player. But I think, really, this is the year that Draymond breaks through and wins it. I mean, he's finished second. And I think the people are beginning to realize, he's guarding centers. And
right.
I think this is the year where people are going to say, you know what? This kid is guarding centers for the last 2 years. I mean, Draymond is 6'7". He's probably a small forward, but he plays the power forward position. And now he's playing the center position.
Yep.
And what he does for that team, I think, is incredible. One of the other kids that I thought was sensational this summer was Paul George.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was defensively on the perimeter. I thought he was the best perimeter defender this year. But I think this is the year where Draymond is going to break through. And he's finished second the last 2 years. And I think this year, I think he's going to break through and win Defensive Player of the Year.
I agree with you. That was my selection for many of the same reasons. I think Kawhi Leonard is going to miss Tim Duncan
more than
Draymond is going to miss Andrew Bogut. Actually, getting Bogut out of the way is now going to allow people to truly appreciate what Draymond does. Because I think a lot of people said, well, he's got Bogut next to him. He's got a rim protector next to him. Now he doesn't. I mean, with Zaza and with David West, now you're going to see that Draymond is the guy that's been protecting the rim all along.
Yes, I agree with that.
All right, sixth man.
Sixth man, I always look for the team I think that's going to push the envelope. Hmm. So I'm going with Alec Burke from the Utah Jazz.
Interesting.
I think this team, you know, when I see young players, they played what I call a competitive 82 games last year. Mm-hmm. They played every game last year. And they really gave themselves an opportunity to compete in every game. And that's all you can ask for. Are you going to win every game? No one's done that. But they gave themselves an opportunity to compete. You know, they came to play and win every night. I think this year, Alec Burke, I think what he's going to contribute and bring to that team. And I think this is the year they get to the playoffs in the West. I mean, they were right there to the end. I think they lost to Dallas Mavericks, if I recall.
Yep.
I think this is the year they get to the playoffs. I think this group with Favors and all those young guys that they have there, I think Hayward is a terrific player. I think he's ready to take the next step. I think they move forward and get one of those sixth, seventh, or eighth spots this year.
To me, they are a poor man's Boston Celtics team, which is they do compete every night. Mm-hmm. They're well coached. They have a lot of depth and versatility. But they don't have that one go-to guy, that closer guy. And what I've seen from Hayward is he's a nice player. And maybe he makes that jump. Maybe he makes that turn. I haven't seen it from him yet. And so that's my one question about just how good they can be. My sixth man, I'm going to go with Evan Turner in Portland. Just because I thought that he was that. I thought he deserved the award last year with Boston. I thought he was very underrated as a guy. In fact, if there was a guy that sort of ended up being their go-to guy, he was in those situations. He was closing a lot of games. And everybody's in love with Jamal Crawford. I think it's as much because of his personality as anything.
Who's that, Jamal?
Yes. And he was the winner of the sixth man last year. And he's a perennial. He's the best sixth man. But he gives up as many points as he scores. So I can't, like... That's, you know, you're drawing
Jamal.
Even there, man.
I love Jamal. You know, I drafted Jamal when I was with the Bulls, and Jamal is, you know, he can score.
He can score.
He's a professional scorer. He is.
But how you know, we talk about this. How much has his game changed since he came into the league?
You know, Jamal. It hasn't changed at all.
I'll answer that for you.
But you know what I love about the kid? The kid has the shortest memory I've ever seen. You can score on Jamal. You can score on him.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bother him, right? It's kind of like, do you know this guy just scored 30 points on you? And he's just not aware of it. Because he knows he's going to get 30.
He's not keeping score at that end of the floor.
He reminds me of what George Gervin told me, like my rookie year. George Gervin, you know, he's like, you know, like he was playing and he was, you know, he was old at the time.
So he was in the league. He was just finishing up when he came in.
Yeah, he's finishing up somewhere. Okay. And I remember, you know, Michael was just going after this guy, right? He's just going after him. And he was like, young fella, my defense is my offense. I was like right in the middle of the game and I paused. I was like, God, that was like a profound statement to me. It was so profound. I still remember it like 30 years later. He was like, young fella, my defense is my offense. So I've always carried that with me. Like some players.
That's their mentality.
That's their mentality. You get 30. I get 31. I won that match. Yeah. I won that matchup.
Right.
So Jamal is like, he doesn't even know.
He doesn't even know if he's getting the one. He just knows what he's got.
All right. But I know this. That kid can score. It doesn't matter. I mean, every night, if I was a coach, I would love to coach Jamal. Because every night, I don't know about that. I'm going to tell you why. Some guys, you know, when you play with some players, they're like, oh, man, coach didn't call my play tonight. Every night, Jamal is going to answer this one question. I was either hot or I wasn't.
That's true. That's true. That's true. He is so consistent. So you know what you're going to get.
Every night, I don't have to call a play for him because every night he's going to give himself a chance. So I love Jamal. Every time I go to a Clipper game, I go, God, he's going to answer that question. He's either hot or he's not. But he's never going to be somewhere in between. Jamal is never going to play 3 minutes in a game and not shoot.
I find that entertaining to watch. I don't know about finding it enjoyable if I was coaching it. Because
you stand with him as a coach. You know, if he doesn't have it, hey, you just bring him out of the game.
Yeah. Well, but here's the problem. Here's the problem with that Clippers team. You take him out of the game, who are you going to instead? That's the problem with that group. Like, you need him to be hot. That's what would be a challenge for me. Okay, Coach of the Year, Coach. Since you're enjoying your Jamal Crawfords, who is winning Coach of the Year this year?
I'm going with Mike Malone.
Oh, Denver Nuggets. Yeah, that is way out of the box.
I like what he did with those young guys. I like how they got better in the second half of the season. Hmm. I like how he held those young guys accountable. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, I thought they were playing pretty good basketball. And I like what they did from that young backcourt they got over there.
Interesting. Interesting.
I really
Are you a believer in Moutier?
I'm a huge fan of Moutier. I really like what they did with that young team in the second half of the season. Hmm. And when I see young players who improve during the year, okay, I know that the coach is holding them accountable, and I know this. Those guys are practicing, okay? Right. And Coach Malone, I thought, did a terrific job. No one talked about it. At the end of the year, those two young players, Gary Harris and Moutier, I thought they were sensational. The young kids they had playing up front. And I like what they did with Gallinari. They had them playing the four.
Yeah.
And they found ways to compete. Again, when you find ways to compete with young players and contribute, and when teams say, oh, you know what? We got to play hard against this team. Yeah. I think Coach Malone maybe sneaks in there this year with this young group. That's looking for Moutier and Gary Harris to really come out and assert themselves at that guard position. They both have great size. I think the kid Moutier is one of the best young talents in this league. Hmm. And again, just like the kid KP over in New York, I'm looking for him to make a big step as well.
Okay.
I'm looking for him. So I'm going with Coach Malone. And I, like I said, I like the way he held young kids accountable. So I was impressed with him last year.
And now MVP. Oh, by the way, I had Tom Thibodeau just because I think that he's going to go into Minnesota. He's got a lot of young talent. He's got some kids coming along. As you mentioned, Chris Dunn. He's got Carl Anthony Towns, who I think is only going to get better. Yep. Like, he has a group that has underachieved. So they could easily go from like 29 to 39 wins just with a little bit of defense and attention to detail. And everybody's going to credit Tibbs for that jump. So I think that's where he has a chance of winning it. Your MVP selection.
Well, I should ask my wife for this. She's been right like the last 3 or 4 years.
Really?
I don't know how she knows this, right? Hmm. We were in Istanbul, Turkey, and she goes, God, I think, true story, she goes, I think Steph is going to be MVP next year. I was like, what? What are you talking about? She just said it like randomly. Like
just out of the blue.
We're at the World Championships, and she just goes, I think he's going to be MVP. So I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
He's MVP. She said the same thing last year. I don't know.
He's not going three times. He's not winning three in a row. They won't let him win three in a row.
The next podcast, I'll check in with her tonight.
Okay.
Who she's going to say. But my pick this year, and his confidence is just not what he's done on the floor, but just watching his confidence, is Kyrie Irving.
Hmm.
Kyrie Irving quietly has been putting together a very impressive year of basketball. Yep. And he's just getting his reps. You know, he's always battled injuries, but quietly he's put together a terrific season last year when he came back.
Hmm.
He's put together a terrific summer. And his body looks in the best shape I've seen him since like high school.
That's an inspired pick right there.
His confidence right now of what he can do on that floor right now, he's pretty good right now.
Yeah.
And he's getting enough reps to where now he just looks confident mentally, physically. He knows where he can score. He knows he can run a team. And I think right now, he's like in one of those zones.
Yeah.
Where right now, he can roll off 25 and 10 right now and nobody would blink.
Yeah.
Because he's in a great enough condition right now. I mean, his conditioning right now, Rick, is just amazing because he hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
And now he's going to have a little time off now. And then he's going to be so much further ahead of all the other players at that position who didn't play over the summer. Right. I just think he's poised this year to come in camp, have a great camp. LeBron, you know, is going to, you know, take a lot of pressure off him from doing a lot of things that a lot of players don't have to do.
Sure.
And I just think he's in a place right now, if he stay healthy, knock on wood, I think he can easily roll off 25-10 this year. They're going to have a terrific year with the talent that they have, looking to repeat. So I'm going with Kyrie Irving.
That's an inspired pick. I'm going to go with Russ Westbrook in Oklahoma City because I saw how he played without KD when KD was hurt. I believe that he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. I hear through sources that he's got a chip on his shoulder because I think he was wrong to sign the extension. I've heard that. I've heard that from my sources.
Well, he was in my office yesterday. I mean, if you want to go there.
Yeah. Was he complaining? Was he complaining about me? Was he complaining about the podcast? Because let's be honest, that's where I said it. Okay. I also have said on Bleacher Report that I think he's going to be this year's MVP for a multitude of reasons.
I can tell you this.
Yeah.
You know, I saw him work out, you know, a couple times this week. I mean, he looks great. I think the Thunder are going to be very pleased with, you know, with him. But you never have to worry about him. I mean, this kid just gets after it. I mean, you know, he's like that thoroughbred where, you know, you got to hold the reins in because he just wants to run. I mean, he's just like most guys, you got to get to the gym. You're like, hey, man, 3 hours is enough.
Right. You got to get him workout. You got to get him out of the gym.
The thing about him, I think it's just going to take a little time.
To adjust.
Yeah. His role is going to adjust. And I think the big thing with Russell is, you know, him and I discussed it a little bit, is going from playing with Kevin Durant and figuring that out to now finishing a game. We all, and what I mean by that is, I remember the big jump, the big jump that we made in those early Bulls teams when our closer Michael stopped playing the game, and he just finished the games.
Hmm.
Our job was
to get him to that point.
Get him to that point.
Yeah.
It was like it was almost two games in one. For the first 44 minutes, our job was to keep the game in striking distance so that he could finish it.
Yeah.
And I think that is a role that Russell is going to have to acquire, and you know, and really.
But he's better at the first 44 than he is in the last four.
Right now, he is the last 4 minutes. Right now, you know, the greatest players in our league.
Yeah.
Are the finishers, okay? Yeah. And we just talked about Hayward, and we talked about, you know, we just saw Kobe Bryant, who was a phenomenal finisher. The greatest players and the best players, they finish. Everyone starts something, right? We start, you have a great game going, but how many guys can actually finish? So I think for this year for Russell, the big jump for him is not so much MVP, because he's going to be playing at the MVP caliber, no question about it. But I really want him to really emphasize this year those last 4 minutes, because those are the great players. The great players in the last 4 minutes, they do three things. They score two, they get to the free throw line and get two, or they get and one. Mm-hmm. I refer to it as a 3D player.
Hmm.
That's your choices in the last 4 minutes of a game.
Hmm.
If the game was close with Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, they are going to score two, get to the free throw line and get two.
Yeah.
Or get an and one. It's your choice.
Yeah.
But they have to be a three-dimensional player.
Yeah.
And when you see those three-dimensional players, Tim Duncan was one of those players. Okay. When you see those guys, now they can finish. If you know you can finish a game, then my job is just to keep the game close.
Right.
If I can keep the game close, how many people can actually do that for a four-minute span in a game? That's what made Kobe great. It wasn't the first 44 minutes. The last 4 minutes of a game, Rick, you and I know if that game was tied.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant was going, he's going to finish the game.
Right.
Michael Jordan was going, I don't know if he was the greatest player, but that man could finish.
Yep.
That's what he did.
All you had to do is not allow the other team to score more than he was going to score, because you knew he was going to get you points.
I learned very quickly that if the game was within 10 points,
yeah,
all right, if we were down 9 and going into the last 4 minutes, we were going to win by 1. He was a plus 10 player.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you talk about this before.
He was a plus 10. I emphasize with all great players, be a plus 10 player. If you are down 9 in the last 4 minutes, you should win by 1.
Let's move on from the award conversation, and another guy who is a workout fiend, Derrick Rose, works out actually an awful lot with Russell Westbrook. And he is changing his number to 25. Which I found very interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, so he's leaving Chicago and he's going to New York. It's a fresh start, but he's taking a number that is iconic to people in Chicago. It's the number that he wore in high school, in part because he went to Simeon High. It's the number that so many players from Chicago have worn. Jabari Parker, Juwan Howard have all worn it to honor Benji Wilson, who was a high school player, once referred to as Magic Johnson with a jump shot.
Yep.
Died all the way back in 1984, was shot by a student from a rival high school, and was considered a great, great player who never got an opportunity to show the world exactly how great he was. Players from Chicago have routinely ever since honored him by wearing the number 25. This feels like, in one part, I love that Derek is sort of honoring his roots even as he goes to New York. But if you're from Chicago and you're a Bulls fan, seeing that 25 on a Knicks uniform, that would be a little bit of a stab in the heart for me, because it's like he's ours. He's recognizing ours, but he's doing it in another uniform.
Well, you know, let's go back to Benji Wilson. I played against Benji Wilson.
Wow.
In high school.
I did not know that.
At the first ABCD Nike camp, actually, was in Princeton, New Jersey, going into our senior, I was 84, so that was going into our senior year.
Okay.
I played against him here, and he was a very unique player, to say the least. I mean, he was 6'8", he was athletic, he could handle the ball, he could shoot it, he could score it, he just had a terrific feel. I mean, and, you know, he was... If I remember correctly, he's about 6'8", 6'9". And he was a big kid who could do some things on the floor that you just didn't see people his size do. So he was a very unique player. The one thing about Derek is Chicago, and Chicago is Derek. But this was his first introduction to the business. And the amazing thing about it is Derek wanted to take something from Chicago with him. Wherever he's at, he's always going to be from Chicago.
Hmm.
Always. And when he went to Simeon, there, and any player who's played at Simeon or familiar with Chicago sports, that number has a very significant meaning.
Sure.
You know, you took him out of Chicago, but no matter where he's at in the world, you know, Chicago is going to be with him.
Hmm.
And as he continues his journey, and his goal has never changed, is to give himself an opportunity to win every time he steps on the floor. That's a significant goal, is to, like, every time I step on the floor, to go, you know what? I want to give myself an opportunity to win. And for him, I think this is a new chapter for him. But more importantly, this is an opportunity where he's playing with players that he's never played with. A Carmelo Anthony. You know, he's playing with this kid, Porzingis, who, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I think this kid is terrific. And he's doing this in the Mecca, in the city. If he's able to achieve what his only goal, his first and last goal is, which is to win games. Give yourself an opportunity to be in every game. Prepare yourself for that journey. You're going to win your fair share of games. If you have an opportunity, you know, to win in the playoffs, then you know what, you're talking about something special. So for him, I think he wants to turn that page. This gives him closure to what he achieved professionally as a basketball player.
Hmm.
By changing his number. But more importantly, he knows now that he's got to figure out how to adjust his game around these other players. Because the expectations of playing in New York is a lot different.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. For sure. So, but he has not exactly shrunk from that.
Well,
he has made a lot of headlines by saying that he thinks that New York, that the Knicks, should be counted as a super team. And he hasn't backed off of that.
Let's put the things in context here. No player is going to come into a season and say, you know what, we don't have a chance to win.
Well, no. But there's a wide gap between we can't win and we're a super team.
I think that's a terminology. You know, again, I'm old. I get it. I'm an old guy. All right. It's amazing to me. You know, when I came into this league, you know, you saw a player. This is what you saw on one team. You saw Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Hall of Famer. You saw James Worthy, Hall of Famer. You saw Magic Johnson, Hall of Famer. Okay. Byron Scott was an all-star. A.C. Green was an all-star. Michael Thompson was coming off the bench, was like the number one pick in the draft. You had Michael Cooper. Okay. And then on another team, you had Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish.
Yeah.
Okay.
There were a lot of super teams.
Okay. Joel Dumars, Isaiah Thomas, Mark McGuire. Okay, I guess I'm so far removed. I don't consider myself a media. So all of these terms are meaningless. To me, the one thing that I miss more than anything about the NBA is the mental warfare that was played from team to team. No one gave a person an inch. You said things in the media just to get the attention of the other player so the game could be heightened. Now the media is saying, well, you're not a super team.
Right. Well, no, guys, but guys also back off of. We're led by arguably the best player in the league consistently does that. LeBron will say something, it'll be interpreted, and then he'll go, oh, no, that's not what I meant.
It's like, I dare you. Like, we're the experts. I dare you to even think that you could be that good. I dare you to even consider. Let's not forget here that, you know, Melo has achieved about almost everything individually you can possibly achieve. You know,
he hasn't been MVP.
He's been right there. I mean, look, if you're in the running for MVP every year, it give or take. You know, Melo at one point was a top five player in this league. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Derrick Rose was an MVP in this league.
Right.
Okay.
Kristaps was the runner up for rookie of the year. I don't have a problem with him saying.
No, but the thing that I like is when I like it when guys challenge other guys. That's what this is all about. This isn't for us to tell them we're not playing, people. You and I are on the podcast. Okay? We are on the sideline. You and I are sitting on the sideline with Spike Lee and all the rest of the fans. Right. So who are we to start telling them what they're doing? Because mentally, as you know, there's a game going on, Rick, whether we are aware of it or not.
Always.
Always a game going on. And mentally, that is the thing. If there's anything that I miss about playing basketball, it's the mental warfare that was going on. I miss saying crazy things in the media just so I knew the other team was going to read it and I wanted to see how they were going to respond.
Right.
Now, because I didn't have to deal with Twitter. I didn't have to deal with Snapchat and all these other, you know, I didn't have to deal with all this other stuff. Because we were mentally trying to figure out, always get an edge on each other.
Yeah.
Now, if you say something now, oh, God, wait a minute. You can't say that.
Right. That's bulletin board material.
These guys are competing even when us so-called experts in the media don't know they're competing.
Yeah, no, that's very true. That's very true.
LeBron James is not just saying stuff, people, just in case y'all don't know. He's saying this so that he can mentally torture the other people, the other team. Okay? So,
right.
And I get it.
I just wish he would stick with it then. He's saying it for a reason, and then when somebody calls him on it, he backs off of it. That's what I appreciate about what Derek said. People question him calling them a super team. He said, I'm not backing off that. I think we're a super team. I appreciate that. Whether it's right or wrong, I don't care. But don't, like, step out there and then go, ooh, people are challenging me. Maybe I'll think twice about that.
I know this. You know, some of the players I get an opportunity. I've never seen this kid back away from a challenge.
Yeah.
Okay. He's not going to back away because the X factor in everything that we talk about and everything we do, Rick, you know what makes all of this go away?
Win.
We win and the Knicks start out 10-0. If the Knicks start out 10-0,
right.
What are we going to say then?
Right.
Because right now, everybody's 0-0.
Sure.
And everyone is looking for an opportunity. And when you raise the bar, you either meet the challenge or you walk away from it. So, okay, you're talking it. Now you got to walk it. What's wrong with that, Rick? Rick, what's wrong with trying to achieve excellence?
Like you said, you're preaching to the choir. I have no problem with that. I don't. In fact, my issue is Derek never got the credit for being the first to wear the I Can't Breathe t-shirt. LeBron hijacked that one from him. Like suddenly, and that, you know what? And it wasn't LeBron. I shouldn't put it on LeBron. It was the media that for whatever reason credited LeBron and some of the other players when Derek is out. And you correct me if I'm wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, Derek was the first one to step out there and wear that t-shirt.
Without question. But he's not doing this for media.
Right. Well, and that's that was part of. I think that's part of the reason why.
And I applaud those young men who took a stance.
Right.
Okay.
Followed in his footsteps.
This young man did it because that was something in his heart.
Yeah.
He didn't do it for media.
Yep.
He's not looking for attention. I was first. Someone Rick lost their life. Okay.
Right. Right.
And let's recognize and be respectful and put this all in its proper place.
It's very true. I agree with all that.
And what was said was done. It was done out of responsibility of what's going on. Just having the awareness of what's going on around you. And the thing that I applaud was he didn't say anything.
Right, right. Well, no. No question. It just bothers me. It bothers me when it feels as if the media is determining who is going to receive the spotlight or credit for certain things when it's a miscarriage and it's simply because of that person or that player's willingness to play along with the media. The media shouldn't take care of whoever is the most accommodating. They should take care of who deserves it. End of story.
Rick Bucher, but you're old school. You report the news, Rick. You stand for something that, as you know, in the media today, is just not there for the most part. You know, so you know it. Now your listeners know it.
One last thing I want to hit before we go, and this is just something that I'm curious about, and it was brought to my attention because Kendall Marshall was traded from the Philadelphia 76ers to the Utah Jazz. And then 10 minutes after that announcement, Kendall Marshall is waived by the Utah Jazz. And I wondered, like, we just forget these guys who suddenly have gone from being in the league, thinking they're going to be in the league, and now they're on the outside looking in, and who knows? Who knows where they're going to be playing, if they're going to be playing? It's a huge impact on their income and their lifestyle. And I wondered from an agent's perspective, like, how do you handle that? This to me is the story, maybe because players don't want the embarrassment of or the naked emotion of losing your job. I mean, who wants to be covered in that moment? But to me, this is the part that fans and people don't really appreciate is that you go from like one of the greatest jobs and livings in the world to suddenly you fall off the ledge and nobody really recognizes just what happened to a guy like a Kendall Marshall. And I wonder, because you've seen it, you've had teammates that it's no doubt happened to, and I think you were fortunate enough that you were never in that situation. You got to go out the way you wanted to. But what do you do as an agent? How do you handle a client who suddenly finds himself without a job?
You know, being an agent, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, it's like the Jerry Maguire. You know, people ask me what I do, and I go, oh, you know, I'm in the sports representation. Oh, you're Jerry Maguire. Show me the money. Ha, ha, ha.
Right.
That's the glamour part of the business. You get your, you know, you help your clients. You help your clients to maximize their potential on and off the floor. You give your clients advice, you work with them, and, you know, they perform, they do what they do. The hard part of this business is helping people to understand this business. Every client that I have an opportunity to work with, as you know, Rick, you've been in my office, there's a ball with no air in it. I give them the ball and I tell them, with this ball, you're worth $1 million. Now, if I take that air out, who are you? And you better know who you are before this air get out of this ball. Because all of us are going to have to answer that question. Every single player that's ever laced these shoes up and played in the NBA had to answer that question. And you better know the answer, my friend, before that air comes out, because it's going to go out. Now, if you understand this business, not this game, but this business, you can have a soft landing. And you can manage all of the things that people that's not in the business are trying to tell you. Because that's what it is. As much as I love this game and I played it and I was able to make financial gains, I was able to make some of my best friends that I have currently to this day, I was able to explore and travel the world because of this game. It was my job to understand this business. And the only people that have an opportunity to understand this business is the people that's putting on them uniforms. It's not them agents. It's not your agent. It's not your friend. It's not your family member. Is you who got that uniform on. And every young man and young woman, you know, that plays this game, they have to understand that that's what it is.
That's what this is. No matter what they say, we love this game. Behind that curtain is a businessman who's looking to maximize his opportunity on his investment and get a return on that. And it's you, and it's your job to do that. So I love it. I love this game. I respect this game. I respect everything about it. But I have, my job is to help educate these young men about the business that they're entering into so that when it's time for that air to come out, that you can move on, my friend. And if you're not ready for it, it could be tough. It could be tough. Thank goodness that I had an opportunity to see this business and learn this business from the inside out. And now I don't even feel I'm an agent. I just feel that I'm a person that's helping to share the experience because I've seen the best of this league. I've seen the worst of this league. I've seen and everything and all in between. And I'm just here to share my experience so that when you do have a problem, you're not alone. I just don't want my clients to feel that they're ever alone. Okay, you got waived. You're not alone. You're not the first one. You're not the first one to get traded. You're not the first one to get cut. You're not the first one to not get what you want in this league. It's not how many times you fall down, Rick. It's how many times can you get back up. Yeah. The most successful people in this business are the people who have the persistence to continue to come back and fight. And I always admire people like Ben Wallace and those people who didn't get drafted but find a way to make it in this league. you know what I mean? And that's those are great stories because, you know, we'd all love to be the number one pick. We'd all love to be loved and all those things. But what about those people like, you know, like Draymond Green? Like, he was like the 35th pick. Who thought that this guy was going to ascend to this level? Come on, raise your hand.
Hey, I was in Washington when Ben Wallace showed up there. There were 13 guys with guaranteed contracts. He was a undrafted, no guarantee, showed up, and they couldn't keep him off the roster.
I love those stories. You know, you hear me say it all the time. It's two things I look for, talent and toughness.
Yeah.
I love those guys who won't accept no. I love those guys where no doesn't exist in their vocabulary. I love those guys where no matter how much you say they can't do it, they just keep coming back. And those guys, to me, are what make this league what it is. You know, the superstars are going to be the superstars. But those type of guys, oh, man, love them.
Well, you're going to have to accept this no. Are you asking, can I continue to do this podcast with you, Bucher? And the answer is no, you cannot. We have run our course.
Hey, you got a new name right now, Rick the Ruler.
Hey, you know what? You got a new name too. You know what it is? Black Yoda. You're Black Yoda. So, I don't know that we're going to change the name of the podcast. It's going to remain BJ and Bucher. But for those of you listening, tune in next week, and we will have another edition of Rick the Ruler and Black Yoda coming to you here on The Cycle. BJ, I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks.